part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Well, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem.
Cool. I mean, I just need to say right off the bat that I'm a huge fan of yours. I mean, I said it in kind of like one of our emails going back and forth about this project, but like I discovered your writing on the Valiant stuff, like the Valiant relaunch universe. And I was like, this guy's on fire. It seemed like whatever you touched in that universe was just like great. And I loved, and I was like, why do I continually love this guy's stuff? Like, so I was just like, every book that came out through Valiant, and I loved all of that stuff. Actually, I've been collecting the old trade paperbacks, but I just want to let you know that I'm a huge, big fan. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, no problem. Have you been following the resurgence stuff, the new stuff?
No, not lately. I've been so busy, like, tracking down. So my local comic shop, I'll say their name, Collector's Paradise, they have like all that old Valiant stuff like in back stock. So I've been collecting that stuff like and focusing on that. And then recently they just came out. Are you involved with the new relaunch?
I am.
Oh, I did not know that.
I did a new Archer and Armstrong book.
Oh, nice.
We did a Western with the Immortal Brothers. That was fun.
Oh, cool.
And now I'm writing the main event book, Resurgence. So definitely check that out. The first issue's on the stands.
Oh, great. No, I'll totally have to check that out. Because again, I loved your stuff. And again, like I said, a big fan. I was not aware that you were involved with the relaunch. I guess I just have not been paying attention. But like,
breaking news. It's all good.
Breaking news to me. So thank you so much for letting me know. But I should say that your name is Fred Van Lente, right? Is that the correct pronunciation?
We've always pronounced it Van Lente.
Van Lente. Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Got it. Fred Van Lente. And you are not here to discuss Valiant. You are here to discuss something else. I should also say that my name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. We're not here, unfortunately, to talk about Valiant. I can have you back to talk about that sometime later if you want. But I think the focus of this particular interview is your new book from Mad Cave called Murder Kingdom, correct?
Correct.
Nice. Yeah. And so I had the chance to read it. And I will say right off the bat, I love to let everyone know I love this. I love the idea. I love the concept. I am a Southern California resident, and so I know all about like theme parks and stuff like that.
You've been on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
Oh, several times. Yeah.
Which is only available at Disneyland.
Yes, that's true. Oh, is it not Disney World? I had no idea.
Nope.
Oh.
That's why Magic Kingdom in California is so fun, because that's the OG.
Yeah.
Theme park, right? So you guys have got like the Matterhorn, which was busted sadly the one time it was in Anaheim.
And
a bunch of stuff. I mean, the only ding on you have the Cinderella's Castle, which is, in my opinion, or am I getting that mixed up? No, you do have you have Sleeping Beauty's Castle.
I think it's
Castle,
Sleeping Beauty's. Yeah.
You have Sleeping Beauty's Castle, which for my money is vastly superior. To the perhaps more well-known Cinderella's Castle in Florida.
Gotcha. I mean, I have not been to the Florida park in so long. My day job is involved with that company. So I have been to the Southern California park a lot. You know, it's been very nice for my family. But So I've been to these parks, that particular park a lot. But what you're dealing with is not that particular corporation or that particular park, correct?
What?
Yeah, exactly. We need to make that clear right off the bat, right?
Sure. any association with any real life corporations is strictly a product of your own diseased imagination.
Exactly. But again, the book is Murder Kingdom, and it comes out this week, right? Correct?
It does on Wednesday.
Nice. Oh, we nailed the timing on that, because sometimes these days with post-COVID and, you know, publishing schedules are still always being affected. And so we nailed it. We got it right on the head. So would you like to let people know what Murder Kingdom is about, since we've kind of hinted at it?
If folks haven't figured that out from our coy banter, Murder Kingdom is a slasher, a horror story set in a fairy tale themed theme park, amusement park called Storybook Kingdom, where some sick individual has decided to start knocking off employees in the manner of the original, much gorier Grimm fairy tales and history. Hans Christian Andersen tales and folklore, where the body count was much higher than what you find in children's cartoons. And our hero, Tanith, who coincidentally, has been taken off her roller coaster managing duties and has become a park princess. She's Briar Rose, which is what was turned into Sleeping Beauty in the film. And she basically has to solve who's committing these heinous murders before she and her friends become victims themselves.
I mean, that is, I mean, it's a great concept and a great idea. And I have to say that, like I said, we've been to, obviously, Southern California. It's not just Disneyland, but it's also Knott's Berry Farm, Universal, and stuff like that.
California Adventure.
Yeah, exactly. And Six Flags, don't want to neglect Six Flags. We've been to lots of theme parks because we are sort of in this Universal hub, not to say Universal, but studios above all others. But
hey, that's a good one too.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. But I mentioned this concept to my teenage daughter, and she kind of like sat up and went, oh, she's like, that is a good idea. So like, where does this come? Oh, sorry.
Indoctrinate the youth.
Yeah, exactly. No, I should say it's obvious to, or it seems like to me that you have a love of theme parks, right? Or that you enjoy them.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I grew up, you're Southern California. I grew up in another hotbed of amusement parkness, which is Cleveland, believe it or not.
Okay.
Because an hour and a half west from us is the roller coaster capital of the world, Cedar Point.
Oh, okay.
Which has more roller coasters than any park in the world. They've got a whole Snoopy land. They're right on Lake Erie, so they've got a whole boardwalk. I was just there 2 months ago. It's fantastic. I also, as a college student, worked at what was briefly a Six Flags. When I worked there, it was just a standalone amusement park called Geauga Lake.
Oh, okay.
And that was super fun. I was a fry cook. I started out as a waiter in the restaurant. And my friends, you do not want to be a waiter at the restaurant for a theme park.
I'm sure.
Where you're dependent on tips, because let me tell you, people spend all their money
elsewhere
before they get to you.
Yeah.
So I knew quite a lot about the behind the scenes of the theme park stuff. One of the first stories I wrote as a kid, as a high schooler, was about Disney World after a nuclear apocalypse.
Oh, wow.
And all the animatronics that come to life and all the all these mutant creatures and stuff. This is a murder mystery. It was a noir set in the post-apocalyptic Disney World. So I always sort of had a fascination with specifically how that park in Florida is run. All the tunnels underground, and that's obviously a big part of what's happening in Murder Kingdom. Although, of course, you know, other than the amusement park connection, there is no connection between Storybook Kingdom, as their lawyers are very quick to point out to everybody in the comic, and any other actually existing.
Yes. Yeah. No connection.
But yes. But I love. I've always loved roller coasters. I watch so many roller coaster. Like, there's so many like how to operate a roller coaster like porn videos on YouTube, and I watched a bunch of those for like, you know, they just the level of detail, the obsessiveness that people, that coaster freaks go into the and then when I was at Cedar Point, which of course has these all these famous roller coasters, like just the dish, you know, you can build all the in the gift shops, they have all like model roller coasters, like
really
the place is just it's just nirvana.
I have to go there someday. That's
coaster
cool.
Nuts. Yeah, it's an hour, it's like an hour drive from the Cleveland airport. It's fantastic.
Oh, wow. I just want to go to Cleveland to visit the birthplace of Superman someday because I'm a huge Superman fan.
There you
so
go. There you
that'll
go.
Be an excuse to go to that park. I mean, the reason I was asking whether you liked parks is because, I mean, I feel like some people might look at something like this and be like, oh, this person does not necessarily like theme parks. But after, like, when you're thinking
why?
About the concept.
Because of all the murder?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, that's, yeah, because of all the murder. But I mean, for me, it's mostly when you think about the concept, it's like, or when you're given sort of like the elevator pitch, I'm sure somebody would be like, huh, the person that created this doesn't like theme parks. But when I was reading the story and stuff and going through it, I was like, wait, there's something under there. There's something underlying that there is. I mean, obviously, it's like, you know, for anyone that goes to theme parks, you're either going to get sucked into it or you're going to be like, I'm out in the heat. I'm online all day. This is terrible. You know what I mean? Or you're going to be like, oh, I can't wait right. to see all the characters and ride all the rides and stuff like that. But once I like read the book and got sort of beyond the concept, I was like, oh, it seems like he really kind of like enjoys these parks and is interested, like you said, like in the goings on behind like what happens or what makes them run, like you said.
Yeah. And just having been an employee, like I've always been interested in like weird jobs.
Sure.
You know, like what, like the kind of stuff that people do, that has a lot of behind the scenes stuff, right? That you don't necessarily get to see. And that's sort of where a lot of this comes from. And then to sort of add the murder mystery element onto that. And, you know, this is more of a, I call it a slasher just because more people know what that is. What it really is if you're a big horror nut, what this really is a giallo.
Uh-huh.
Which is a primarily Italian genre that is essentially a murder mystery, but with way more like blood and particularly the 70s like softcore sex stuff. There's not really any sex stuff in Murder Kingdom, although keep reading, you know, you might be surprised.
Uh-huh.
But this is really sort of my version of a giallo, which is kind of like if someone saw, like the Italian saw Psycho and were like, what if every movie was like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
In color. You know,
yeah,
and way more shower scenes, you know, and so this is kind of what Murder Kingdom is. Actually, there is a shower scene in Murder Kingdom, but it's not particularly lascivious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting. As I was reading, I was like wondering how deep into sort of the, you know, giallo or kind of like quote unquote slasher like genre tropes that we were going to go. And it is a female lead. And I did know yeah. kind of the shower scene, but I was like, there's nothing like untoward about it. Like she just takes a
right.
shower, right?
She's, yeah. She's dirty.
Yeah, exactly. And for
it's a
like
practical
a,
shower,
a really messed up reason, which I was like, has this yes. ever, I mean, I'm sure there's, I know
well, it happens.
Oh, sorry.
It happens all the time.
You're kidding. That particular
all the time.
I'm not going to spoil anything.
Since it's literally in the first page of the book, so I don't feel a problem spoiling it.
Oh,
so basically,
okay.
The reason Tanith has to take a shower is that someone is trying to spread grandma's ashes on her favorite ride that she's operating, and the urn gets stuck and then pops open and she's basically doused in another person's ashes. And unfortunately, this is a misdemeanor even in Florida to distribute human remains on private property without a permit, and this is a huge problem in Disney World.
Yeah,
huge problem.
Really, I had
people try to do all that. And I think Disneyland as well. The security has their hands full constantly trying to stop people from dumping
really I had no idea
ash form.
Oh wow. I mean, I have several yeah. friends who have worked the parks or worked at different theme parks and stuff like that, and I've heard some crazy stories, but I've never heard anything like that. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, no, it's a big problem.
Oh,
you know?
Wow. Holy cow, that's crazy.
You know, there's a great Japanese movie called Afterlife, which is about the afterlife. And one of the premises of the movie is before you pass on to the next world, you get to take one memory from with you. And there's a great bit where a very young girl has died in a car accident. It's like, well, we had this really great time at Tokyo Disneyland, and that's the memory I want to take with me. And one of the like angel workers takes her aside and says, you know, everybody says Disneyland.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You might want to. I'm just a suggestion, maybe come up with something else. So it's there is sort of that great sort of interesting connection with the afterlife and Disney World, where for a lot of people, it's literally heaven.
Yeah.
And they want to spend the rest of their eternity there.
Yeah. You yeah. know? Yeah. I mean, I guess so. I know that. Yeah. From having spoken to people in the area that I live, there's a lot of like Uber diehard Disney yeah. fans that
super fans. Well, and Lauren Hushausen, my wonderful editor, she is a Disney super fan. So she was able to, she, there's a, several things in this where she was like, what about this? What about that? And I was like, I did not know anything about that. She actually got married in Disneyland.
Oh, wow.
No, Disney World, sorry. So I definitely had somebody backing me up who is specifically a Magic Kingdom super fan.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow, wow. That's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I loved the little bits of like working behind the scenes at the roller coaster. And it's like, hey, this is supposed to be like a temporary job, but I actually like doing this because I don't necessarily right. have to deal with people. Like there's all these like little bits of behind the scene, like working at a theme park. And I think that when yeah. you go to something like that, particularly, so I may knock another theme park when I'm talking about Disneyland. Like I had been to Knott's Berry Farm for the first time, like ever okay. in Southern. I've lived here for like 30 years, but I went to Knott's Berry Farm right. and I liked it. But when I went in, I was like, oh, this is kind of dirty, or oh, this looks run down, or this doesn't look as nice. And I grew to I was like, wait a minute. Like Disney puts a lot of effort into making everything look like spectacular, like, you know what I mean, like very clean, everything gets picked up, everything looks like it's, you know, running sure. nicely. And I was just like, not to compare one park to the other, but you know,
yeah, my wife's mother always said. I mean, they basically moved to Florida from New York State just to be near Disney World.
Oh really?
So that's, you know, and so like, you know, until very recently, they probably won't be telling the story, they'd never left the country.
Oh,
right. They'd never been outside the United States.
Okay.
And then we were planning this trip to Italy or somewhere. And they're, you know, her mother's Italian. And, you know, they're calling us from Epcot, Italy. And like, this is so awesome. Like, well, don't you go to the real Italy? Like, no, it's dirty.
Oh God.
Epcot, Italy is clean, you know, and right over here is Epcot, China or whatever. You
know? Oh, wow. That's amazing. That's such a Italy's
yeah,
dirty.
No, I mean, for a lot of people, you know, it's very, you know, and that's why I was finding it interesting when they struggle, right? Like when they had a tough time getting that Star Wars hotel off the ground.
Yeah.
And it's always interesting, you know, the public is willing to go this far in, you know, the immaculate environments, but I don't necessarily want to go that far.
Yeah. No, totally understood. Totally. I mean, one of the things that fascinates me sort of about this and why I think this is like such a great idea. And again, I've said I'm a big fan of your writing. I've already, you know, kissed your butt enough. But I mean, I read the concept, I was like, how has no one really, I mean, I know there was like a movie that somebody made where they snuck like cameras into like Disney World or Disneyland like several right. years ago, but it was kind of like I never saw it. I actually always wanted to check it out. I can't remember the name of it, but where did you, I mean, one of the great things of like, of what a writer does, as especially with great concepts, is like you take the thing, you know, the Reese's Pieces thing, or like, you know, Reese's Peanut Butter Cup is like, you took your chocolate and put it in my peanut butter and I never expected it to work this great, like, right? Like those old commercials.
Right.
And like, how did you, where did you come up with the concept of like, yeah, there's a killer loose in a theme park, you know, where everybody's right. supposed to be happy and, you know, memories are supposed to be made and all that stuff. Like, was that just sitting around in your brain for a long time or?
Well, the Murder Kingdom originally started life as a prose novel.
Oh, really? Okay.
I've written a couple. I've written a few novels now. Uh-huh. And actually, we've started talking about Valiant. My new prose novel is about Bloodshot. It's called, wait for it, Bloodshot. And it's out this January, so keep your eyes peeled.
Oh, excellent.
But I've written several original novels as well. The first two were murder mysteries. One was called 10 Dead Comedians, and it was about stand-up, obviously. Again, interesting jobs. And then the second one, interesting jobs, was set San Diego Comic-Con. It was called Con Artist, and it was about a comics artist accused of murder during San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, nice.
And the publisher, you know, wanted to hear more. And so I was trying to, like, think about what pop culture murder mysteries would be fun. And so I ended up with Murder Kingdom. That the novel thing ended up not taking off, but I never forgot the idea. And I quickly realized that it would probably make an even better comic because it was so visual.
Yeah.
You know, and so arresting. And certainly Chris Ponda, our fantastic artist.
Yeah.
Went the extra mile and designed the heck out of everything. Like, we have a map of Storybook Kingdom. You'll see it on the cover of the second issue the great Paulina Gunishow. She did a fantastic job with all the covers. But there's, we know what all the rides are. I mapped out all and where they are and what their names are. And there's five different worlds in Storybook Kingdom, right? There's, you've already seen Charming Shire, right, which is like the medieval part, and then there's Spooky Forest, Fort America, Neptune's Cove, and Xmas Village, which is like the main street, you know, of Storybook Kingdom. And so don't worry, we'll visit all five parks in all five issues.
No, that's great that you have like the whole thing like thought and mapped out. It almost seems like like an RPG map, like Dungeons and Dragons. Like, this is the
exactly. The land. I actually, during the pandemic, this idea has been around so long, I ran a Fallout RPG campaign set in Storybook Kingdom,
nice.
The post-apocalyptic thing. And Lauren, my editor, was actually played in that campaign.
Oh, that's great.
So she kind of remembered that from a couple years after them, when I was like, okay, that, remember that theme park from Fallout? This was actually, this was what that was actually
for. Oh, that's great. So you're an RPG nerd as well.
Oh, huge. Yeah, we just successfully kickstarted through Clover Press a book called Game Masters.
Oh, okay.
Me and Tom Fowler. That's the this is a comic book history of role-playing games. This year is the 50th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons, of course.
Yeah.
And so we start with chess. So it basically starts with chess in the 6th century in India, where chess was invented, and winds up basically at Baldur's Gate 3 today. So I just reviewed the colors of the first chapter before I jumped on the script.
I must have totally missed that, like, via Kickstarter. So I mean, obviously I'm getting Kickstarter invites like all the time through this podcast.
I know, right?
But yeah. I mean, is there any way people can get that now? Like, is there still a link to support it? Or
yes, in fact, don't forget, gang, I'm sure this will come up later, but you can sign up for my newsletter at the homepage of FrederickLay.com. So you'll learn about all this stuff. You can spell my name. You know what the website is.
Uh-huh.
And Kickstarter did this lovely thing. Wait, is it the Kickstarter? No, it's the, it's pinned my, you know, it's pinned to my Twitter account. Let me get the link here.
Is it something that,
you can sign up at Kickstarter and just pre-order it.
Got it.
If the Kickstarter was still active. So I will drop this in the sky.
Nice. And it's a comic book history of role-playing games, or just games in general?
Yeah. Role-playing games.
Gotcha. That sounds amazing. Yeah. That's great. Oh, I'm totally going to have to check that out. That sounds great. I mean, I ran a superhero RPG thing with friends for like years.
Which one?
What's that?
Which one?
Oh, Villains of Vigilantes? Do you recall that one at all?
Oh, of course, Villains and Vigilantes. Well, Villains and Vigilantes is most famous for producing The Elementals.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Very, very roundabout way.
Yeah.
Which is Bill Willingham's superhero comic that has been trapped in copyright.
Yeah.
Forever.
Well, apparently somebody's doing something with the Elementals on Kickstarter. I don't know like what it is, or if Bill Willingham's involved or like anything, but somebody's been going around Facebook being like, hey, we're trying to do an Elementals thing. And I was like, this seems dodgy. Like, I don't know. So,
Well, the story, and I don't know if you should bother including this in the recording or what, but my understanding, the story has always been, and I don't know how true it is, that Jim Lee is like the world's biggest Elementals
fan. Oh, really?
Right, head of DC Comics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And every year, the guy who bought it when Comico, where they published Elementals, did their, you know, bankruptcy sale or asset forfeiture or whatever the heck it was.
Yeah.
Some guy bought the Elementals, and every year tries to sell it to Jim Lee for some, you know,
ungodly sum.
Insane sum, where even Jim Lee is like, nah, I'm not that big of a fan.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Dial it back, dude.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So I don't know if this is the same person, but anyway, that's the comics legend is that
I'm totally leaving that in this recording. That's amazing to me.
Someone owns the elementals and has been spent the last few decades trying to get somebody to pay him a ridiculous amount of money to take.
And it's not Bill Willingham. Oh, that's crazy. I had no idea.
No.
I guess I should pay more attention to the minutia of independent comic book characters from the 80s.
Man, it's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah. So, not to divulge too much from Murder Kingdom, because I you could have me talking about role-playing games, villains, and vigilantes like all day long for, a week or so. But how did you come to be... how did this idea come to Mad Cave? Because, I mean, I've interviewed a lot of creators from Mad Cave, and, they've been very generous with, sharing their, creators with me and coming onto the podcast. And, Don't Hide PR is great. And, selling their stuff or letting me know about their stuff. But my understanding is that sometimes Mad Cave will be like, hey, we have an idea, and they reach out to creators and they're like, would you like to do this? Or was this more of an instance where they reached out to you and were like, we want to work with you, and you were like, I have an idea, and I'm would you like to do this? Does that make any sense?
So it's entirely through Lauren.
Okay.
My aforementioned editor.
Yeah.
She had edited a Valiant book. She started out at Valiant.
Okay.
And she and I worked on a book called Generation Zero.
Yeah.
Then Robert Myers, who's currently at a great company called Bad Egg that I have a new comic out from coming out from, but let's not. It's supposed to be on Murder Kingdom. I don't want to.
We can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Too many titles. Yeah, exactly.
We can talk about Village of Vigilantes if you want. I'm just,
That's right. Well, I was a Champions guy. I respect Villains and Vigilantes. I'm not very familiar
with them. No, not a champion. Too much numbers and stuff like that. Whatever. Anyway, go on.
Really, I'm more of a Marvel superheroes guy.
Well,
but we won't even get
isn't
into that.
Everyone in the end? Yeah.
I mean, I want to know who owns the forget Elementals. Who owns the rights to the Marvel superhero system?
I don't think anybody does. You can get it online for free at this point. It seems like people just keep posting it. And
those are all bootlegs. But sure. Fair enough. Anyway, Lauren got the job at Mad Cave running Maverick, their young adult imprint, And I was like, can I pitch you? And she was like, sure. Oh. And so we had this very kind of informal, friendly Zoom, and I pitched her a bunch of stuff. And her favorite was Murder Kingdom. And so she championed it. And
nice.
Matt Kay bought it, and we were off to the races. So really it was my, and again, it probably didn't hurt that Warren was semi-familiar with the concept in the first place, because she had been in this Fallout campaign.
Oh, gotcha.
That had featured Park.
Sure.
That didn't hurt.
So very sly selling is to get an editor involved in your RPG campaign.
That's right.
That's very much. How long did the campaign run?
The group has been started in 2016.
Oh, gotcha.
Actually. And then we started playing D&D as many role-playing game groups do.
Sure.
We all became fast friends, and we just bounced around various systems. And that the Fallout Florida, it was Fallout Florida.
Okay.
And of which the amusement park was an important part, but they ran all over Florida. You want to talk about interesting amusement parks, we should at some point we should talk about the Holy Land, which is the Bible theme park in Florida, which is a real thing. And if you read my Arthur and Armstrong series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I've already used that. But that campaign was only about like half a year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just wondering how many
2021 or something.
How you have all this time to run RPG campaigns and write comic books and novels and stuff like that. Your time management skills must be amazing.
They are. Thank you. I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, I'm so busy. I mean, I am very busy, but the key is you always got to break it up into segments. If you look at everything as a totality, you're just going to get overwhelmed and depressed.
Mm.
But if you take each task and break it down into, I've always been a great list maker.
Yeah.
Right. And like checker offer of, so, it is able, you are able to This past week actually has been a nightmare.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I have Murder Kingdom coming out. Well, I have Murder Kingdom coming out. I'm going to Deadwood, South Dakota on Wednesday for a hacker convention because that's my life.
Oh.
And so it's been a little stressful, but no, at no point has my ability to break down big tasks into much smaller manageable tasks it's really come in handy recently.
Well, I apologize if I've added to that stress. You could
no, please no. We got to promote. You know,
yeah.
I love it that you know you didn't. It's the only way people know about these projects.
Sure.
These days, it's just to go on shows like these and promote them.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well,
as a wise man once said, "Pimpin' ain't easy."
Wow. Wow. We are full on in the 80s with Champions and Village of Vigilantes and Pimpin' Ain't Easy. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. No, you and I are from the same era, I think. Yeah, that's great. No, one of the things I wanted to ask you, too, when it comes to this book, you know, it's called Murder Kingdom. And like you said, it has a giallo or slasher sort of thing. And we're in October. So, you know, it's kind of the spooky month and people are into that. But like the first issue, other than what you mentioned happens in the beginning with the ashes of a relative, which I was just like, what a great kind of hook to suck you into the book. Cause I was like, wait, what's going on here? What is that? And then it's like, oh no. But there isn't like any necessary up until the end of the book, nothing crazy, like really happens and stuff like that. How, giallo are you going to get? Cause you mentioned that a little bit earlier that you're like, okay, we're heading into sort of that territory. And so far, like everything is like really compelling and interesting because it's behind the scenes, like the bit where she gets kind of like recruited to be a princess and she's not really of, you know, of that, group of employees where she's supposed right. to dress up and go out and deal with the public and stuff like that. Most of it is kind of like set up and then you get to the end and it's like, oh boy, like here it goes. How crazy are we going to get like with Murder Kingdom?
Oh, very.
Oh, okay.
Like, in fact, the third issue has, I mean, when I wrote it, I was like, how is this going to come off? And then Chris drew it and I was like, wow, yeah. All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't eat lunch before reading this comic.
It's great. I mean, no, I'm looking very forward to that. You seem to have a lot of knowledge of like a lot of different things, RPGs, comics and stuff like that. Obviously you're a writer, so you probably read a lot. Like how much into horror are you? Like, is it like a thing that you really enjoy? Okay. Okay. What are some of your favorites then? Like what are,
as a fan, it's probably my favorite genre.
Oh, really?
To which superheroes would be a close second or a distant second.
Oh, okay. 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 Like, and how did you discover horror? Like what was kind of like your first experience with that? Cause, I know for me, I was a fraidy cat as a kid and it wasn't necessarily until some friends sat me down in front of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and made me watch it where I was like, I was like, okay, like that wasn't as terrifying as I thought. Like not a slam on Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's one of my favorite horror movies. But I was like, nobody came out and killed me like as the movie, you know, rolled on.
Right.
So that was kind of like one of my first horror experiences. What do you recall?
Lead through the screen.
Yeah, it came through the screen. Exactly. But I mean, what would have been, do you recall like what it was that set off your love of horror?
Sure. I mean, although I grew up mostly in Cleveland, I started out in New Jersey.
Oh, me too. We're in Jersey.
And the Livingston, New Providence was the little town my parents lived in. My dad had just gotten his PhD and was working at a hospital in Livingston.
Okay.
If you know where Livingston, New Jersey is.
Nice.
Not that far from Newark.
Yeah.
But in the 80s, well, late 70s, I guess, there was the horror host was Uncle Floyd. I don't know if you are old enough to remember Uncle Floyd and who was on.
I might not have been
one of the UHF stations.
Like I said, it was a fraidy cat. So at that point.
Well, he had like King Kong and Godzilla.
Okay.
And like the horror, the universal horror, and especially the Hammer horror was my first love. So the first horror movie I remember really loving was Horror of Dracula and Curse of Frankenstein, those two movies
nice. That
Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee did. And then from there, they used to have like these picture books that had like the old Universal, like monster movies in them, like with stills,
okay,
you know, from the movie. So I love the Wolfman. I got really into a Wolfman. The first comic I drew on my own as a kid was a Wolfman comic, and I had a whole like Wolfman series. And of course, when the Star Wars figures were big, they came out with the Universal Monsters action figures. So I often had Luke Skywalker getting his ass kicked by Phantom of the Opera because and who teamed up with Creature from the Black Lagoon and you know, rock Chewbacca's world, you know, because I definitely was more of a monster kid. So that's really where it started. And then just, you know, then I would go to repertory houses, you know, where you had them in Cleveland and see like, you know, George Romero and Cronenberg was a huge influence on me.
Yeah.
Loved Stephen King when I was like in middle school and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's really been a lifelong thing almost as long as my superhero obsession.
Gotcha, gotcha. And like as far as authors, I mean, you mentioned King. Is he still one of your favorites, or does that like what are your current sort of like horror? Are you reading like horror novels now these days?
Yeah, well, I love Grady Hendrix, okay. Who's a good buddy of mine. He gave us a lovely blurb that's on the back of Murder Kingdom number one.
Oh, that's great.
He's probably best known for My Best Friend's Exorcism, which was made into a movie for Amazon.
Okay.
Some of his other books are How to Sell a Haunted House, The Southern Book Club's Guide to Killing Vampires, The Last Girl, The Final Girl Support Group was the book that led me to have him quote Murder Kingdom. Yeah. So he's fantastic. Like everybody else, I love H.P. Lovecraft. Ramsey Campbell, who I was a big fan of in like the 80s. He's sort of from a Lovecraft tradition. Mm-hmm. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the great authors, Nick Kaufman and Dave Wellington, who are currently in my role-playing game group.
Oh, nice. Look at you.
They are big Call of Cthulhu nuts.
Oh, nice. That's great. That's fantastic. So,
and my first book, actually, to sort of merge horror and role-playing games was a Call of Cthulhu supplement back in 1997.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's cool. That's great. So I was not aware of this. Have you, we keep bouncing back to RPG stuff. I mean, you've written for RPG stuff as well?
Yeah, well, not since the 90s.
Gotcha.
My first thing that I ever published was a GURPS article in a Steve Jackson Games GURPS. Magazine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, but I haven't actually really done anything professionally since.
Sure.
I've toyed around doing having stuff published just for fun.
Yeah.
But I always end up getting sucked into some other like professional project. So
got it.
It never happens. The pay is terrible, so it's hard
okay.
to tear myself away from, you know, more lucrative projects. But I love it, and I may very well end up doing it.
Sure.
You know.
When
my other work becomes unprofitable.
I don't see that ever happening. You seem like one of the busiest guys in comics and again, incredibly talented. So like
this week, it certainly feels that way.
I'm sorry.
No, again, I love doing this. This is a nice little, I turned in the script right before I jumped on the sky.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay, great. Yeah.
I turned in the script. I checked the Game Master's colors and then I jumped on the sky.
Wow.
It's all good.
That's amazing. No. So we've been talking about novels and movies and stuff like that. What about comics? Because like that's always the question I have for horror, you know, comic creators, right? It's like I remember when I was younger, I like the EC stuff mostly because of the art, to tell you the honest truth, like you know, like Wally Wood and stuff like that, and
Jack,
you know,
Davis.
Yeah, exactly, and just love the EC, and I liked, you know, the kind of Twilight Zone-y nature, you know, not knowing any different, like that those came before the Twilight Zone when I was young, you know, that sort of story kind of thing. But I don't ever recall, particularly in my youth, because it was mostly superheroes, ever being like really freaked out by a like comic or ever being like kind of scared, right? What are your thoughts on like that sort of thing, like how that works within comics? Do you think comics, horror comics, can be scary? Do you think that there's an ability?
Absolutely. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't add, for those listeners who are in the New York City area, the Society of Illustrators has a whole Jack Davis retrospective in their museum right now with just some spectacular EC splashes and covers.
I gotta get
originals that if you are, I don't know how long it's up, but if you're in the area, definitely check it out. Yeah, I mean, well, okay. When you're a kid, all sorts of things are scary. I remember I had these giant, there's this giant treasury edition of Marvel Team Up.
Okay.
But it wasn't called Marvel Team Up, it's called The Spectacular Spider-Man.
Sure.
And was it The Spectacular? Anyway, but there's this Marvel Team Up issue drawn by Mike Ploog, who was the great Man-Thing artist. And Man-Thing is one of the great horror comics of all time. The Steve Gerber, Ploog. Malmark, Man-Thing. But there was this villain called the Orb, right? Who was a ghostwriter villain, and he takes his helmet was an eyeball.
Yeah.
Right? And so he takes the eyeball helmet off, and I don't know why, as a kid, just the mess that guy's met, he had like a messed up, like, I don't, you know, like, you know, people need to stop lying, you know, leaving vats of acid lying around just open because people keep falling into them and turning into supervillains.
Yeah.
And this guy, his face was so messed up, and it scared the bejesus out of me. But I loved the comic so much. Like there was a werewolf story in it. There was a X-Men were in it. And so what I did was I took a piece of black construction paper and I cut a square out of it, and then I taped it over the reveal panel.
Okay.
Of the Orb taking his helmet off, so that way I didn't have to look at it. I can just read the rest of the comic and not look at that particular image because it freaked me out so much.
That's amazing. That's
so that was definitely literally, you know, an instance of a horror comic being genuinely scary. And I mean, for my money, the best comics creator working right now is Junji Ito.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think his comics, particularly a bunch of them, are super unsettling. I just caught, I don't know if folks here have Max, I just caught the first episode of the Adult Swim Uzumaki.
Yeah, I'm trying to wait till it's done. Yeah. And,
I mean, I turned in like an old man shaking his fist at the clouds, because it's literally, I mean, it's not, because the live action movie Uzumaki is terrible.
Yeah.
But the cartoon is fine, but it's literally the comic, like shot for shot.
Oh,
and
okay.
I was like, you kids, read a manga. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. No, Junji Ito is one of the things I was going to bring up, where I was like, it wasn't until I read, quite honestly, a lot of manga. There's one called Dragonhead, which I cannot remember the creators of, came out from Tokyopop years ago. That one like freaked me out. And it wasn't necessarily a horror. It was more of like being trapped in like a subway tunnel sort of thing that scared the crap out of me. And I think for me, as more of an adult, like in my 20s or 30s, I think it was manga that made me go like, oh, comics can be really scary. But it's interesting that you mention the Marvel stuff, because the very first comic, one of the very first comics, it may have been the very first comic I ever read as a kid, was a Fantastic Four issue where Franklin Richards is possessed or something, and Agatha Harkness comes in, and it freaked the hell out of me as a kid. And I have that issue.
Salem 7 show up?
What's that?
It's Salem 7 show up?
I can't remember. I have to go back and look at the issue, but it's one of those things that I actually sought out at a convention to buy when I got older, because I was like, oh, I remember this. Like, and the cover is like Franklin and he's glowing, and it just freaked the hell out of me as a little kid. And I couldn't even like keep it around the house. Like it scared me so much. Obviously somebody at Marvel had seen The Exorcist or something, you know, picked up on a trend and was like, hey, let's have Franklin be possessed or whatever. But like, yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because as a kid, there are definitely comic moments that I remember being like freaked out by. And then for some reason, not thinking that comics could be like really scary as I got older. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I mean... At this point, it's funny. I consume so much horror.
Yeah.
Both, like, I have a Shudder account. I read horror novels. I read horror comics way more than I produce, I should say. I'm much more of a fan. I like reading horror more than like writing horror, which is not just because I have any predilections before or against it. It's just I'm just kind of a fan. I find it hard to like be scared. Like every once in a while, a jump scare will like get me, you know, like, you got me. That was good. But yeah, I mean, and we're just, I mean, there's just so many great, I think partly because of the existence of a streaming service like Shudder, there's just so many great horror movies out right now. Like, some of the best movies I saw this year were like The Substance with Demi Moore is fantastic.
Oh, do you like that? See, yeah, I liked it until the end.
I loved it.
Oh, really?
I loved it all the way through. Okay. Yeah, I guess the end for maybe is over the top for some people, but I thought it was fantastic.
Okay.
I loved Late Night with the Devil was fantastic. Okay. I really like Strange Darling.
Oh, I need to see that one. Indeed. I'm dying to see that one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That one's super fun.
Okay.
That's one I shouldn't spoil at all.
No, do not spoil it.
Yeah, there's just been a bunch of great horror movies the last couple of years.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I mean, for sure, it's exploded. I mean, what do you look for in horror? Like, what is the sort of thing, as someone who you just said, like, you consume a lot of it. Is there ever any danger? Like, I have a friend who runs a horror reviewing YouTube channel, right? And I'm like, how do you have the time to watch all of them? Because quite honestly, he gets sent stuff and sometimes he'll recommend something and I'm like, I won't like it. And I'll be like, that was, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff out there too. To you, what signifies like great horror and how do you sift through all of it, particularly with your busy schedule?
Well, part of it is I have an Alamo Draft House season pass. I go to horror movies for free.
Okay.
So I just, it kind of depends on what they program. And also I think the Shudder's programmers are pretty good.
Sure.
So I just kind of like sift through that. So I kind of let the gatekeepers decide for me to a certain degree. I'm not necessarily out there, you know.
Hunting.
Yeah. I kind of let it come to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if your friend reviews comics, please send him your copy of Murder Kingdom released.
Okay. I will let him know. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. That'd be great. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I guess, you know, I'm on enough like Twitter, like horror news Twitter accounts that I hear stuff, and I have a couple buddies who are even more into the stuff than I am. So I kind of hear from them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like the modern era, right? You immerse yourself in this stuff. And I guess with movies, there's less of an output than some other things. So it's harder for stuff to slip between the cracks. And there is some stuff like most like quote unquote traditional slashers I have zero interest in.
Yeah.
And there's some subgenres that I have no, like if you start talking about like demons and devils, I really, my eyes start.
Oh, really? What is it about it? What is it about that you
like nuns exploitation specifically and stuff like that? Like anything like coming from The Omen or The Exorcist, I'm just like, whatever.
Really?
I don't know. I guess it's just, I'm such a relentless atheist. I'm just like, you know, to me that, yeah, you know, no offense to any of the Catholics currently listening, but it's like a whole other layer of bullshit.
Yeah.
Supernatural stuff I have to put up with has been layered over there, you know.
That's interesting.
Ghosts, empires, fine, but you know,
got it.
Because anytime anyone starts talking about the war in heaven and the devil's trying to get souls, I'm just like,
you can't just accept like a superhero. I mean, I'm an atheist. I'm an agnostic myself, so I have no qualm with it, whatever. But it's interesting because like every October we like to talk about horror movies on Part-Time Fanboy, and we went and looked, you know, I gather either creators or friends or, you know, whoever can come on, you know, because I have to schedule it months in advance before October. And we did The Exorcist, right? Like, and that to me is one of the most horrifying, like, it just scares the crap out of me. It scared me as a kid.
Well, sure.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, The Exorcist is a great movie. I won't, you know, I wouldn't, just because I don't particularly like the subgenre. Like, I don't like most zombie movies, but Night of the Living Dead is a great movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna deny that. I'm not gonna hold The Exorcist against all the crap it spawns. That's not The Exorcist's fault.
No.
Exorcist is a great movie.
No, absolutely. I totally agree with you. Absolutely. But I mean, what's great about that to me, what I was gonna say is the thing that rewatching it as an adult with a child, like I was like, when I was a kid, it was about the devil, right? And it was about like, oh my God, the devil's going to come and possess my sister or something and, you know, kill me or whatever. And as an adult, it's more about mental illness or cancer or so your child being sick and not being able to do anything about it and how horrifying that is. So like the good stuff seems to work on multiple levels, at least to me, where I was like, oh, when I was younger, it was this, but now it's this. And that's just as horrifying as well, right?
Yeah, sure. As a child, you identify with Regan, and as an adult, you identify with the mom, or as a parent, you identify with the mom. Yeah. And as you get older, you'll identify with Max von Sydow. You know?
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
No, not the old man. Oh, wait. I'm
the old man. Yeah. Well, I'm all.
Am I a narcissist?
I'm almost there. No, I mean, that's the other interesting thing is, like, you mentioned Stephen King, and recently I was trying to go back and read some of his books that I'd never had time to read. Like, I read Carrie and I read Salem's Lot. Right. I'm kind of trying to go back from the beginning a little bit to the ones that I hadn't read. And the thing that I realized about Stephen King's books, and I just posted this on Facebook because I watched the Salem's Lot remake last night, and whatever, I'll leave that to whoever wants to, you know, think about it. But
would you recommend it, the remake?
What's that?
Did you like the remake?
No, I did not like it. But
that's what I'm hearing.
What's that?
I have yet to meet someone who has a different opinion.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. No, but what I was going to say is, like, to me, the thing that makes King's books work is that they're ultimately tragedies and they have horror in them, right? And the characters are so developed that once you sort of get to the horror, you're just like, this is bad. Like Carrie, reading Carrie for the first time, which, you know, his first novel, just kicked ass. And I was, to me anyway. Yeah. And when I got to the end, I almost cried. Like, The Dead Zone made me cry. And Salem's Lot made me really sad. And I was like, these are sad books. They're not am I making any sense here? Like, it's just.
No, I totally agree. And to me, that's partly why, to me, something like the movie Carrie doesn't really work, because Brian De Palma, you know, people, if you read the book Carrie, obviously it's all told from its, you know, various characters' point of view in letters and books. It's very much in the style of Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Uh-huh.
But the movie's so sort of over the top. And I am one of the few people who actually agrees with Stephen King that I'm not a fan of The Shining very much.
Okay.
For the same reason he is, which is that kind of like De Palma's direction in Carrie, Nicholson's performance in Shining is so over the top. It's just like, I do think that because he starts so crazy, just to sort of totally back up what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's less of a tragedy because it's less of a fall, right? The whole point of a tragedy is you see the great fall.
Yeah.
Or, the loving be unrewarded. But if Nicholson is such a psycho from the very beginning, it's like, well, what did you think was going to, you know, then they're just like idiots for, you know, putting him in this hotel all winter, you know, like.
Sure. Yeah.
What else is he going to do but chop up his family into little pieces?
Sounds like we disagree on The Shining a little bit too, although I've never read the book.
That's
so
fine.
I don't. Yeah, no, that's fine. For me, like Nicholson.
I've actually never read the book either.
Oh, really? Really? For me, it's interesting.
I just like the movie.
Yeah. I have a friend who was like, yeah, well, he starts at 11. And I'm like, I don't think he starts at 11. I think he dislikes his family from the very beginning. But there is a slide into like I dislike my family and then I'm just going to chop them up into little pieces. Like, I think he does go through an arc, but what's interesting to me, again, we did The Shining at one point and rewatched it. And again, as an adult, I was like, oh, from the beginning, I never saw this. He hates his family. He hates his life. He's not a happy person, but there's a difference for me, right? Like, between that and I want to kill everyone. Like, hopefully that, you know, I just try to stick up for Jack Nicholson because I like Jack Nicholson when I was a kid. So I don't know when I was younger, but anyway.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, it just from a, you know, like, no one gives a crap what I think. The movie's super successful. It's not like I'm going to like hurt its reputation.
No, of course, me neither.
You know, I teach a lot of writing, and the problem is that it's not dramatically interesting to have somebody who hates their family, and I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
To then have the decision be, well, then I'm going to coop myself up and myself in a place with my family for 6 months. Like, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, Oedipus is a tragedy because he basically accidentally falls into, as much as one can, murdering his father and marrying his wife while Jack Nicholson very much consciously does an incredibly stupid thing that just makes him look like an idiot.
Sure. No, I totally understand that viewpoint. It's interesting. Again, I could talk about The Shining like all, and I would love to talk about The Shining with you, but I know you're busy and stuff like that. But like, yeah, I totally get what you're talking about. And to me, it's, yeah, I don't know. Rewatching it the last time. And then again, my daughter had to watch it for like a film studies class in high school. And we rewatched it and she was like, oh, wow. And there's all this crazy, and I know that it's, you know, the language of the time right now, but crazy toxic masculinity, crazy, like I was just like, how did none of us like ever see this in this movie? But anyway, I will drop it.
Again, that's also part of my problem with the movie. Yeah. Is that stuff is so, that he's so unpleasant.
Yeah.
You know, like it's very much a hard one.
Yeah. 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 Sure. Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not in a good way.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, but that's great. Well, I mean, I've had you almost for an hour and, you know, I really, really appreciate your time and I know you're busy and you got to take off, but is there anything else you would like people to know about Murder Kingdom?
It's awesome. And
it's definitely awesome.
On, October, what is it? 9th?
Yeah.
So please check it out. The covers are all awesome. Support your local retailer and pick it up.
Yeah. Well, I love your stuff and I love this. I tend to like a lot of what Mad Cave does as well. So you're in good company. I mean, with them.
Yeah.
So, but I really, really appreciate your time. You are literally one of my favorite comic writers. It is hard to keep track of everything. I'm sorry I did not know about the Valiant relaunch and that you were involved with that.
I forgive you.
Yeah, but
you can't be everywhere.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely going to have to check that out because I'm busy trying to read through the older stuff, but because I loved it so much, reread a lot of it. But again, the book is called Murder Kingdom. It is out this Wednesday. By the time this interview goes up, which will probably be either Wednesday or Thursday, it should be in comic shops. Again, it is from Mad Cave Studios, correct? Is it Mad Cave Comics, Mad Cave Studios? I always kind of mess that
studios,
up.
Studios.
Mad Cave Studios. Yeah. And you are Fred Van Lente, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got the pronunciation correct. I just want to make sure. And thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you online, sir?
Well, if you can spell Fred Van Lente, then that's me pretty much everywhere. That's my handle on Instagram and Twitter /X and Blue Sky. Facebook.com is my website. It's my Gmail account if you want to email me. I'm pretty much it's unique enough that I'm just there as my name.
Great, great. Well, thank you so much for your time. You're welcome back anytime you want to come back on.
Thank you
I've
so much.
I really enjoyed this and I really just appreciate your time. And again, the book is called Murder Kingdom. It's out this week by Mad Cave Studios, Fred Van Lente. And my name is Christian Horn. That is not a name pronunciation I will screw up because it is my own name. Again, this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. You can check us out at parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We are on Threads. We are no longer on the hellscape that is Twix. Thank you for listening. Please go check out Murder Kingdom this week. It's great. It'll be a great Halloween read. You will love it. It's fantastic. I loved it. And not just because I love Fred's work. I genuinely am not blowing smoke up your butt. Go check this book out. Thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing. I'm doing part-time.
Part-time fanboy.